We're starting a show now called The Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests, or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com. We start the show tonight with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone called Mama Lily. Then I do an interview with Adam Arian and hear some of his barbershop quartet music. Then on to a segment produced by Jaber Burick called Poetry Corner, followed by a story by me, Mystic Pete, called Urban Savannah. Then tunes by Leon Rubenhold, Michu, and Adam Bauer. Stay tuned.
Lily Eva Houston was born in 1899 in Worth County, Georgia, to Eva Hayes and Henry Houston. She had two brothers, Nick and Doc. She married Alfred Isaiah Willis March 29, 1916. They bought a 70-acre farm for $400 and had six children, to Ruth Rowe, Edna, my mom, Maudie, Henry, Alfred Isaiah Jr., and Billy. Edna was my mom, making Lily my grandmother. All the grandchildren and great-grandchildren called her Mama Lily, and she was a pistol. Mama Lily's called her husband Alf. By the time I can remember meeting him, Granddaddy was totally blind. He was a diabetic at the time before the invention of insulin. Granddaddy was also a fairly good violin player, at least on the song Turkey in the Straw. We have his fiddle now. It's a German-made pre-World War II instrument. It now resides in a fiberglass case with an interior humidifier. It's a good instrument, not a great instrument, but my daughter Mika can make it sing. Once Granddaddy's eyesight started failing, Mama Lily became the family breadwinner, something at which she excelled. They opened a boarding house in Warner Robins, Georgia, at the intersection of Front Street, now called First Street, and Young Avenue. She fed and housed up to 20 men, most of whom worked at Robins Air Force Base. Miss Willis's boarding house was not a luxury facility by any stretch of the imagination, but it was clean and the food was great. Three meals a day, 6.5 days a week, 52 weeks a year, and the price was right. $20 for a week's room and board, cash only, no checks. No one had credit cards back then anyway. Most of my family were non-drinkers. There might have been a little eggnog consumed at Christmas, but the idea of someone having a beer in the evening was very foreign to me. I did not know what a mixed drink was until I was a teenager. My mom called beer the devil's vomit. I was not a big beer drinker in college. I wonder why. A cough or a sore throat would get you a glass of Mama Lily Special. Dad kept a bottle of old Granddad bourbon under the kitchen sink for medicinal purposes. Old Granddad came in a triangular-shaped bottle. The Mama Lily Special consisted of 1 tablespoon of old Granddad, 1 tablespoon of honey, and 1 tablespoon of lemon juice. That stuff works, too. I gave my son a glass of it this week. He slept like a baby, no coughing through the night. The men at the boarding house were called to meals by a brass bell that was rung by hand. It was a great honor for one of the grandchildren to be asked to ring the bell. Breakfast was at 7 a.m. The noon meal in the South is called dinner. Dinner was at 12 noon. Supper, the evening meal, was at 6 p.m. Any man that could not make it back for dinner was given a sack lunch, which was comprised of two sandwiches and an apple or an orange. The sandwiches were normally Spam with mustard on light bread. Men other than the boarders could come to the boarding house for dinner or supper. I think the cost was 50 cents for a meal in the 1950s. If you have never been to a boarding house for a meal, this is how it worked. There was no menu. You ate what was served. Normally, there was a lot of food. There would normally be several types of meat, chicken, pork, beef, and occasionally fish, normally fried mullet. The vegetable portion of the meal was where the Willis boarding house excelled. Peas, butter beans, snap beans, cream corn, collards, turnips, okra, mustard, the greens, not the hot dog condiment, rutabaga, sliced tomatoes, cucumbers, etc. There was always a bottle of pepper sauce to add some zing to your greens. There would also be cornbread, hoe cakes, and biscuits. If Mama Lily made one biscuit in her life, she made a million. Biscuits were at every meal, and Mama Lily's biscuits were good. Two biscuits, butter, and some cane syrup made a meal. Everyone sat at the same table. The food was served in bowls and on platters. The food was passed around the table until the bowls and platters were empty. The term boarding house reach meant you had long arms, long enough to reach the platter of fried chicken without bothering the person sitting next to you. You could eat as much as you want. It was the deal of the century to men that did physically demanding jobs in construction. Dessert was another high point of the meal. All sorts of fruit cobblers, bread pudding, banana pudding, cakes, and pies. The boarders could eat as much as they wanted to eat. Mama Lily's bread pudding and banana pudding were as good as it gets. Coffee was the breakfast meal. It was served hot and black. You could add some carnation condensed milk from a can on the table if you wanted to. You could have sweet tea or water for your drink at dinner or supper. Mama Lily sweetened her tea with saccharin. Saccharin was cheaper than sugar, and she had a diabetic husband. She kept using saccharin after Alf died, and it was not a tribute to her dead husband. Saccharin leaves a bitter taste or metallic aftertaste. I love Mama Lily's cooking, but I never really cared for her tea. Sweet tea is called the table wine of the South. Nothing went to waste at the Willis boarding house. If there was bread left over, it was made into bread pudding, which was amazing. Any leftover cornbread or hoe cakes was converted into dressing, as in turkey and dressing. Any vegetables left over were converted into vegetable soup. Mama Lily was a little heavy-handed with the pepper in her soup. A hot bowl of her soup in the wintertime would warm you up and put a tear in your eyes. In the mid-50s, any food scraps were fed to three pigs kept in a pen behind her boarding house. After feeding on the leftovers, the pigs became the main course. I think the city put a stop to keeping livestock within the city limits in the 1960s. Today, I think this would be called government overreach. Mama Lily hated a nickel because it wasn't a dime. To say she was frugal does a disservice to the word frugal. She was so tight with the dollar. Mama Lily made Jack Benny looked like Diamond Jim Brady. She lived through the Great Depression with children. She was not going to let that happen to her again. Mama Lily served biscuits at every meal. That meant she used a lot of flour, which she bought in 25-pound fabric sacks. The flour she bought came in fabric flour sacks that could be recycled into something useful. Each flour sack was made from 1 yard of cotton fabric. All the curtains in the boarding house were made from flour sacks. All the dishes were washed using Octagon soap. Big bars of Octagon soap came wrapped in paper that included coupons. Save enough Octagon coupons and you would get some sort of trinket. Some powdered soap used for laundry came with a dish or a glass inside. All the dishes and glasses in the boarding house came from detergent boxes. They never matched, but they were free. The bottled caps from the Coke machine could be used to gain admission to the Rama Theater. And last but not least, any purchase at a grocery store came with S&H green stamps. Mama Lily had book after book of S&H green stamps that could be redeemed for all sorts of things. Feeding 20 men required a lot of groceries. Mama Lily hit all three grocery stores in Warner Robins, depending on what was on sale where. When Mama Lily went to the grocery store, the manager would meet her at the front door. "Hello, Mrs. Willis, I have four buggies for you." All three grocery store managers would save all the dented cans and the cans with no labels on them for Mama Lily. She would get a lot of volume for not much money. She paid pennies on the dollar for the dented and non-labeled cans. When she opened the cans, whatever was in there was what was going to be served at the next meal. She was a magician in the kitchen. It did not matter what was in the cans. It came out of the kitchen tasting right. Who knew that pickled beets could be made into anything remotely edible? Mama Lily ran a cash business. She ran her business out of a large black pocketbook that she carried in the crook of her left arm. There was also a black coin purse inside the pocketbook. It had a chromed plated clasp that prevented the coins from escaping. There was no telling how much cash was in that pocketbook some days. Everybody knew she was loaded with cash. Mama Lily was never robbed. Those were different days. When Mama Lily's pocketbook cash balance got too high, she would go to the bank, not to make a bank deposit, but to put the money in her safety deposit box. Mama Lily figured out early on that if you put money into the bank, there was a record of it. If you kept it liquid, there was no record of it. It did not exist. Mama Lily hated paying taxes. Mama Lily had a bank account, but the majority of her business was in cash, and she stayed in cash. She was 41 years old when Social Security became the law of the land. She reported the absolute minimum in order to qualify for Social Security. In 1954, Mama Lily was tired of living at the boarding house, so she bought a beautiful ranch house at 8880 Harkinsville Road in Bibb County. She and Alf were going to spend their days on this 10-acre property. I remember visiting there when I was a kid. They had a TV, and we did not. Why would a blind man need a television? I remember walking Granddaddy around the yard in cold weather. We found a spot on the sunny side brick-facing wall and sat down. He proceeded to teach me how to whistle. Today, I can whistle so loud it will break glass. This is a talent that served me well when I lived in New York and needed a taxi. Granddaddy died 1 year later in 1955. I remember him in his casket in the living room of the house. Funerals were different in the 1950s. Visitation was in the home of the deceased, and the deceased was there for it. Mama Lily did not drive. She was now a widower, owner, and resident of a large ranch-type house 5 miles from her boarding house, so she needed someone to drive her to and from her source of income. After going down the list of all the siblings' pros and cons, it was decided that my family would move in with Mama Lily. We moved from 910 Ponce de Leon Circle to 8880 Hawkinsville Road in 1955, and I started first grade at John H. Hurd School. My family lived at 8880 Hawkinsville Road until 1999, 44 years. We sold the house to the Department of Transportation in 2009. There is now a road on the property where the house used to sit. Daddy got up early, 5:30 a.m. every morning, and drove Mama Lily to work at the boarding house. Not only did he drive her to work, he also joined in the cooking of breakfast. He was in charge of bacon and frying eggs. He would eat breakfast with Mama Lily and then head off to work. At the end of the day, Dad would eat supper with Mama Lily, help clean up, and then drive her home. His white GMC pickup with the squeaky front bumper would pull into the driveway at 8880 Hawkinsville Road every evening about 7:30 p.m. It was a long day for him. Once I started driving, I would drive Mama Lily to the boarding house on weekends. She would cook breakfast for just the two of us, and we would sit and eat breakfast, and I would get the lessons in how to live my life. Pay cash was a big part of the Mama Lily Willis School for Financial Success. Live within your means was another one. We also discussed family happenings, marriages, births, deaths, and the occasional dread divorce. She hated a liar. "Scratch a liar, find a thief," was one of her lines that I remember. I remember Mama Lily would saucer her coffee. She would take the cup from the saucer and pour hot coffee into the saucer, thereby increasing the surface area, allowing the coffee to cool to a drinkable temperature. It's rare for families to live with three generations into one household today. It was a different time in the 1950s. I view it as a great gift. The knowledge imparted from Mama Lily hangs with me to this day. Mama Lily died in 1972. For visitation, her casket sat in the same living room at 8880 Hawkinsville Road as her husband, Alf. She was there for both events.
This is Mystic Pete. It's October 9th, 2020. I have Adam Arian on the phone, who is an actor, singer, teacher, director, a spokesperson, and political commentator. Adam, did I get it correct?
Yeah, basically. I don't know if I've ever officially been called a political commentator, but I mean, if you look at my Facebook, that's what I am, I suppose.
Well, I'm Mystic Pete, and I'm hereby anointing you. It's been stated now. You are officially a political commentator. And the fact that you're in Brooklyn, well, I'll try to overlook that.
I'm just glad I can tell my friends now I'm an official political commentator. So when they get annoyed with how often I'm posting political stuff, I can tell them, listen, that's my job.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's legit now. Well, talk to me. Tell me what projects you have going right now.
Well, you know, the pandemic is the pandemic. So a lot of projects that had been going are you know, very much on pause or on hold. There's really not very many ways to direct theater right now. There's not a lot of ways to act in theater right now. Although I am acting in a play actually that we're looking to put up soon. Called In the Parking Lot, and it's actually written for the pandemic, with the idea being that people would come and drive in and be in a parking lot. So it was actually written with this in mind, which is funny. A lot of my artistic output basically in the last 6 months has been singing songs at my piano and singing songs with myself in harmony on this app I found called Acapella, which is really cool. And that's I'm always kind of writing something. I've got a TV pilot that I've written and I'm shopping around, but you know, business is sort of closed a little bit, so that's been the interesting challenge of staying creative and staying artistic without most of the normal avenues.
We had talked about this interview being about how does the artistic personality come to terms with crisis. It's something that artists always have done and turn it into art. And here right. You are creating plague theater.
That was one set of artists' response to the pandemic and figuring out how to still make stuff. And for me personally, I've kind of been on a little bit of a musical journey in the last 6 months. I've always been a singer, and I performed in a lot of musical theater. And I have a barbershop quartet that I sing with in Brooklyn. We like to call ourselves Brooklyn's only barbershop quartet, but we're not sure if that's true. We just still say it. But in the pandemic, it's been... I wound up by myself at a cabin in the Berkshires for 3.5 months with my parents' piano. And I always played piano a little bit, but like never quite enough that I was confident to sit down and get through a whole set of songs and stuff like that. And with absolutely nothing else to do, I got it together on the piano finally. My mom would be so proud after so many years of piano lessons when I was a kid and not actually completing the task. That came together for me in the pandemic, which has been great.
Well, there has been this kind of grassroots rebirth of arts since the pandemic. I interviewed a woman a few weeks ago who's doing chalk art all over the Santa Monica parking lots. And she even showed me that you can make homemade chalk. So, you know, whether it's artists at home creating a lot of music or craft making, sourdough bread making, there is something that's happening, and it's maybe pulling the arts out of like the official legit stuff and bringing it a little bit back to home. I like that journey. And
yeah,
talk about the personal artistic journey relative to the journey of society, because I mean, I know a lot of people in the creative community, like I don't get involved with politics. I don't even vote, but they seem to be very intertwined right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always been intertwined, and I've always been the kind of artist that when I have the choice, I do political things, choose political pieces, get involved with political pieces when I can. But yeah, right now you're right. There's been this incredible grassroots, as you said, arts thing that's really happening, honestly, through social media, I think, where the number of different musicians I've heard during the pandemic that I would never have heard of because they've either gone viral or they've gone like micro viral just among my friends. Somebody finds somebody and they're like, oh my God, listen to this. And it's just been inspiring how many people are making things sometimes for the first time and sharing it on social media, and it's getting a little bit of buzz. I mean, there's a couple people who've become quite famous during the pandemic. I mean, forgive me if they were sort of famous before, I didn't know them, but I mean, Sarah Cooper with her Trump impressions, you know, that was a completely from the pandemic thing where she blew up to the level of being signed by William Morris and becoming this national figure in the DNC, right? There's a hilarious comedian named JT Firstman on Instagram, I actually don't remember his first real name, who's blown up in the pandemic. And so there's been a real sense of people posting their own stuff online, right? And then I think that's coincided with what's always sort of been happening, especially in these really highly charged political times, that people are always posting political things online, and those are going around and being argued about and shared and raising money for this thing and getting petition signatures for that thing. And I think there's been a real interesting combination of those two things a lot in the pandemic, where people are recording a song for a cause. I don't know if you heard of some of these. There's been some hashtags that were like soliciting songs of comfort and songs of joy from people, you know? And so people have been doing that, making recordings and making songs they may not have before because certain celebrities had put out hashtags asking for them. One of my favorites was Laura Benanti, who's a Broadway star, put out a call early in the pandemic, hashtag sunshine songs, asking especially all the young people, especially high school kids and pre-high school kids who were supposed to have their music recitals, supposed to have their plays, their musicals happen, to please post what they were going to perform with this hashtag, and she'll keep sharing them. So things like that have been beautiful. There's been a real call for people to generate art.
I've always seen the personal and the political as the same thing. How we lead our lives individually is related to how civilization conducts itself. I don't understand how some people can be totally deaf to that larger conversation, but I would say the majority of people I know are. They just aren't concerned with civil society. Any comments about the arts and the larger societal influences?
Yeah. I'm with you, Peter. I do not understand how people who are otherwise good people can be happy to stick their heads in the sand and, you know, not watch the news. I don't really get involved in politics. I don't really, you know, it's like politics is the machinery by which people get treated well or get treated badly. People get killed or they live, they get enough food to eat or they don't. Like, this is all going through politics. It matters, and it always has mattered. And it boggles my mind that some people somehow stay out of it, so to speak, when there's so much going on right now that affects so many people. I mean, we are in this pandemic that I've never personally experienced the functioning of government affecting my life so personally. What the government's doing is changing my day-to-day life based on how they're handling this situation, you know? And I think a lot of people are feeling that more than ever. And I do think we're gonna have record-breaking turnout in this election because of that. But I'm with you. I don't understand how some people stay out of it. And with art as well, I mean, you know, there's art that's just for entertainment. There's art that's about other important things that aren't politics. But I think there's a huge place for politics in art. There's a beautiful line in a Pete Seeger song called Letter to Eve, where he sings, if music could only bring peace, I'd only be a musician.
Mm.
Right? But he's not just a musician, he's an activist, et cetera, et cetera. Like, music's good, but but it's not going to bring peace on its own.
Adam Marion, thank you for your words. I know you have a lot of energy coming through your music. We're going to play a few selections now, and I would encourage people to seek you out and explore all the fine gifts you are giving humanity.
Well, thank you so much, Peter. I'm on Facebook, Adam Marion, or Instagram, aka First Man.
First Man.
First Man, yeah. AKA are my initials, also known as Adam Kenneth Arian. And then First Man, because my name's Adam.
A-R-I-A-N.
Thank you so much, Peter. It's really great to have a chance to talk to you.
Take care.
All right. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. Ba-doom-ba-da-ba-doom-ba-doom-ba-da-ya-ba-doom-ba-doom-ba-doom-ba-da.
I never cared much for moonlit skies. I never winked back at fireflies. But now that the stars are in your eyes, I'm beginning to see the light, the light. I never went in for afterglow or candlelight on the mistletoe. But now when you turn the lamp down low, I'm beginning to see the light. Used to ramble through the park, shadow boxing in the dark. Then you came and caused a spark that's a four-alarm fire now. I never made love by lantern shine. I never saw rainbows in my wine. But now that your lips are burning mine, I'm beginning to see the light. Used to ramble through the park, shadow boxing in the dark. Then you came and caused a spark that's a four-alarm fire now. Wow. I never made love by lantern shine. I never saw rainbows in my wine. But now that your lips are burning mine, I'm beginning to see the light. I'm beginning to see what I've been longing to see. Beginning to see the light.
Yes, I can see the light.
Gone is the romance that was so divine. Tis broken and cannot be mended. You must go your way, and I must go mine. But now that our love dreams have ended, what'll I do when you are far away and I am blue? What'll I do? What'll I do when I am wondering who is kissing you? What'll I do? What'll I do with just a photograph to tell my troubles to?
Two songs we just heard were by a barbershop quartet called the Four Fives. That includes Adam Arian, Jeremy Goff, Jed Smith, and Nick Moy. It was I'm Beginning to See the Light, and then What'll I Do? The last song was sung entirely by Adam Arian in the Still of the Night on an app we use these days in the time of COVID. Next, a segment put together by Japer Burick called Poetry Corner, followed by a story by me, Mystic Pete, called Urban Savannah, followed by an original tune by Leon Rubenhold called Getting Old is Getting Old, and then Japanese artist Michu Tangsamble, and we wrap up the show with a section of a tune by Adam Bauer off of his new album called Return to the Sacred, Vijagrama Hari Rama.
Hello, and welcome to Poetry Corner. Top poets of Los Angeles, local poetry. This is Liminal Space, Subliminal Space, going to the park at night alone, going to the park in the daytime with some of your friends, and many more. Thank you for tuning in your car, in your home, wherever you might be. Peace be with you, and thank you for listening. Let's get into some of the poems. This is a poem by my friend Nature.
How to Mend a Clay Pot by Nature. Everything in your life is a choice, everything. Now you know, so choose wisely from now onward. You can choose jagged, you can choose smooth, you can even choose both, but always one at a time. That's how you create music. Smooth, jagged, jagged, smooth, 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 jagged, jagged. Mix and match as you please, then enjoy. Remember balance, if you please. Now ask yourself, what do I need to heal? Then do it, choose it. After it is done, ask yourself, what else do I need to heal some more? Then do it again and you will heal. You will shed skin, skin after skin, and you will become light. Change happens, pain happens. That's just life. That's just music. Dance, it is all good. Let's say today is not the best. Only you can imagine tomorrow. Only you can create tomorrow. So create a beautiful tomorrow. The best tomorrow to have ever tomorrowed. Then choose that tomorrow. Sing your dreams, share your dreams. You can never share all. You can never give yourself away. What's yours is always yours. Share what you wish, share what you desire, keep some to yourself as you please. But know this, you can only gain from sharing. There is only gain in sharing. That's How to Mend a Clay Pot by Nature. Thank you, Nature. Worried, 1 a.m. Musings by Rebecca Northrup. Somehow the sun rises every morning, and she didn't even need me to help her up. The papers sit on the porch when I go out to get them, and sometimes the mail arrives on time too. The waves crash over the shore like it's nothing, and somehow there's always a warm bed for me to lay down in. Every day people die, and every day babies are born. There's a whole world happening consistently around me. I worry about getting up as I am falling asleep. I fear that I won't make it to work on time, and then after that, I won't have enough time after work to do the laundry. Since the loss, I've been on autopilot. But reality sets in when I let it, and when that happens, I'm worried all over again. I have to remind myself the flowers will keep growing because someone's watering them. The earth will keep spinning because that's what it does. I don't know how I will do it, but it will get done. That's Worried 1 a.m. Musings by Rebecca Northrup. She's got a few books under her name, Amazon or Barnes & Nobles, and her most recent one's called Chameleon. That's Rebecca Northrup.
Here's a poem by me, a.k.a. Jasper Burick, and I don't know what it's called.
Reaching inside and pulling out black sludge. Pie on a windowsill, friend with a nudge. It's a harvest moon and feeling love has been feeling love. Fruit has been nectarful. The streets have been kinder to my ankles than sometimes. But enough about me and my problems and pros and cons. Are you stiff with static? Are you still full from the last big meal? Do you go silent during Thanksgiving? You're existing purple and white on black space right now, to my eyes, but to others and yourself maybe, if nothing else, you're existing. And I'm writing you into a spiral staircase leading up to yourself, and around your stem, and the stem follows up the staircase around itself to the top of itself where the fruit lay, the fresh, sweet, tender, juicy bauble of popper sung, joyfully sung, flesh and blood of sweet life. The sweet life, deck of cards on stained table and friends around, tethered or on pills or neither, just existing in this one image of the moment, if not within the moment that actually happened. My sister sitting with us on the ground, grounding. I thought I said enough about my problems and pros and cons, but I can't shut up about them. Maybe I need a space to say it. I was describing you how I saw you. Two mirrors that lay on top of each other making an image of phase. And if electrical current should pass through the nodes on one of those two mirror objects, you would shift, you would shift. You would be kind of like one of those pictures where it's either a queen, the chess piece, or two women looking at each other. You would be physical and plastic, but you would be as you are appearing to me now, floating in between two poles. A weightless, but not zero. Singular, metal, conductive, and you and I are watching a conductor and his baton and all possibilities of whatever music he is shaking to, I grant you, as options. I grant you all I can in this moment, which, if I've learned any one thing, is representative, as they all are, of all of moments.
You're currently listening to Back Home by James Doran. All right, one more poem for today. This is by Sasha Burek, aka my sister.
Should I say the title? Okay. This poem is called Shedding Snakeskin. I fear trump cards and logicians, the empty sweep of palms and finger flesh, ribboning and twined them round places fruitlessly hard to reach. A fathom, a feather. I fear stillborn news and each smallest location of woe that aches with swollen grief like the fullness of funeral flowers, graveside lilies of white backed on green. I fear sweet royals of toilsome information, the reams we chart on index spines of books, the cable that ought not to be severed, but what if? I fear the moisture in eyes when it finally fails to come, when it will not materialize any longer for you or your plight. In perpetual death, I fear the looseness binding this world and the last, the next, the unfinal world to which my body lies in abandon like so much chalk, dust that never settles, but beautifies rose thorns and nettles by the lakeland, a Danish summer I had, and then insisted that you take from me.
And that was Shedding Snakeskin by Sasha Burek. And you can find her on Instagram at isometries, isometries. And that's my sister. And that's all the poems we have for today. And thanks to Mystic Pete for letting me do this. And he's a good guy. And hopefully I can do another one of these. So if you write poetry, please send me an email with one of your poems. No bad words, please. Email me at jasperburik@gmail.com. JASPERBURIK. Email me your poems, or if you make instrumental music of any kind, you make beats, you make jazz, anything instrumental, please also send it to me if you want that on the radio. Thank you to our poets this week, Nature, Rebecca Northrup, Sasha Burek, and thank you to James Doran for the music. And this has truly been Poetry Corner. Local Bohems, local Boets, liminal space, subliminal space. And if you're in your car, driving home from work, driving to work, driving for fun, just driving, good luck on the road and peace be with you. And thank you for tuning in. If you're at home, peace be with you. Thank you for tuning in. Wherever you might be, peace be with you and thank you.
I guess I've been bullied one too many times. So when the guy backed up to me in his shiny black convertible, perfectly detailed Mercedes SL65 AMG, the hand-built expensive one, I didn't move. I was holding a parking spot by standing in it. A well-appointed man got out and said, "Get out of the way!" I explained in a friendly tone, "I'm saving this spot for a friend. She'll be here in a minute." He said, "You can't do that. Move, or I'll back into you." I said coolly, "Go ahead. If your vehicle touches me, I'll sue you and take away that nice car and your house and everything you own." He got in my face and barked, "Enough! Get out of the way!" I don't think he was used to people standing up to him. I understood his outrage. Who was I to literally stand in the way of what he wanted? I dared him, "And you'll go to prison." He got back in his car and edged it right next to me, about 3 feet from the curb. There was no way he could properly park with me standing there, but he was going to try. Just then, my girlfriend called my cell phone and said that she had found a parking space elsewhere and was on her way to the restaurant. As I walked away, I artfully exaggerated my gestures talking on the phone so to communicate to the fellow that the person I was waiting for had found another parking spot and I chose to leave. I hadn't chickened out. Truth is, I was glad to have an out. If I pushed it, I might have gotten rich at the cost of a few cuts and scrapes, maybe a broken leg or two. But that ordeal was more than I could stomach on that particular night. Plus, I didn't want to keep my lady waiting. I was also glad she hadn't driven up to see this macho standoff. She hates it when I act like an ape. Although, I was pretty sure I could convince her afterwards that the other guy was the aggressor. And perhaps I was wrong. Perhaps one can't hold a parking spot by standing in it. But what really struck me was how this multimillionaire was willing to risk everything he had and his freedom for that parking space. If he wouldn't have faced horrific consequence, he might have even killed me. A trivial street dispute instantly turned this distinguished gentleman into a ruthless predator out there on that wild urban savanna. Maybe that's why he was rich. I left out that after he got back in his car to try to squeeze into the space, probably careless from anger, he backed his car into the SUV behind him. I heard a crunch and knew metal and or plastic had bent and or broken. I don't feel a bit guilty over the joy that gave me.
On the young, but the truth be told, getting old is getting old. Now I wake up in the morning, I don't jump out of bed. Sometimes the room starts a spinning right round in my head. That's what I say. it on the young, but the truth be told, getting old, it's getting old. It's getting old. It's getting old. We're getting old.
Thank you.
We are coming to the end of a show called The Mystic Pete Chronicles. If you'd like to reach me, or perhaps be interviewed for radio yourself, you can find me at mysticpete.com. We started the show with a story by Mike Bone, then an interview with Adam Arian, followed by three of his tunes, Japer Burick's Poetry Corner, then a story by me, Urban Savannah, followed by tunes by Leon Rubenhold, Michu, and Adam Bauer. Thanks so much for listening. Mystic Pete out.